So, second talk for the day, ontology-based integration in EPNET from Alessandro Mosca, the Free University of Bolzano-Bozen. I'll let you introduce yourself and then start your talk. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much, Emilio. Thank you very much to all the organizers for inviting me to give this talk today. So, if I have to introduce myself, I would say that I'm a logician that works in computer science, and in particular, I'm working in a group that is called Knowledge Representation and Database Research Center at the Free University of Bolzano. So I would say that I'm 80% of my time. Research time actually I spend into the development and the design and the development of formal languages that can be used to specify ontologies, and doing this and 20% of my time I actually design proper ontologies and domain ontologies, so with domain experts. So I moved to something a little bit more, let's say, technical in my talk. So, and I'm going to tell you something about an approach to data integration and data access that is called ontology-based data integration and data access, indeed, OBDA and OBDI. So, I apologize since the very beginning because I will not have time to go into the detail of the digital artifacts that we used in the context of this project, because this would actually require a completely different presentation. While my main task today will be to give you the flavor of this approach and the technologies behind and the platform we developed in the context of the project. So let me give you a bit of context for the talk and motivations. So we started working at this OBDI platform in the context of a project, a research project funded by the European Research Council, the ERC. It was called EPINET. So production and distribution of food during the Roman Empire. It started in 2014 and the project and ended last year, 2019. So what it was all about? So the project was about the study of the trading system during the Roman Empire. It is recognized actually as probably the first complex trading systems in our world, and there are actually scholars that claim and argue that this system was not so different from the economic system and the trading system we are actually living in today. So the main goal of the project was to somehow, of course, provide new theories and new models to explain the dynamics of this, of the trading system of the Roman Empire, but also to provide to other scholars and to other communities a kind of virtual laboratory based on computer science technologies to somehow compare theories, not only just specify theories, but also compare them and possibly falsify them. So at the very beginning, our motivation was driven by the fact, by an observation that most of the theories concerning the economics of the Roman Empire were not actually falsifiable theory. Were too informal, let's say. So one big goal of the project was to provide the possibility to make them more formal, more comparable, and possibly falsifiable. So of course, if you want to do that, okay, so one thing that I had to say because of the Margrit actually and questions and comments and the presentation before, is that we try to do that from a social point of view by building a small community, including historians, so experts of the Roman Empire economy, and computer scientists from different fields. So we were three teams from computer science, one in expert in agent-based modeling. Another one was a team actually made by computer scientists and physicians, expert in complex network analysis. And let's say our team, my team, that was focused on data management, okay? So I was saying, if we want to do that, if we want to achieve this goal, so a fundamental ingredient, of course, to if you want to foster the specification of new models and new theories, are somehow the data, okay? So we immediately faced the problem of accessing the available data and integrating the available data together. So here I have a slide just to give you an example of a small, let's say, a fragment of the data we were dealing with in the context of the project. So we were talking about, of course, food, edible items, the containers that actually were used to move this food from one place to another, production places, inscriptions that were placed actually on the surface of these containers, reporting names of producers, names of the receivers actually of this food. And also we were dealing with, of course, places, and everything was contextualized into a temporal dimension. Okay, so far so good. The all these data actually were available in multiple data sets that were physically distributed and geographically distributed. So for example, here you see a first database of inscription by the University of Barcelona, actually at the top left of this slide. Then there was the epigraphic database of IDEPR that is an enormous and very important repository for Latin inscriptions. And there we have the Pleiades data set that is about ancient places, and data set from the Archaeological Data Service by Southampton University on types of amphoras and containers. So this is to tell you that, I mean, some of these data sets were somehow overlapping in their content, such as the University of Barcelona one on epigraphy and inscriptions and the epigraphic database of Heidelberg. Some other were somehow complementing each other. So for example, in the data sets of the University of Barcelona, we have places that relate actually inscriptions to, for example, the places where they actually been found. But this information is only partial. So we needed somehow to complement this information with other data sets. And of course, as we already commented this morning, each data set were actually implemented according to its own format. So they were somehow heterogeneous, both from a technical point of view, that is not a big deal somehow, I would say, but also from a conceptual point of view. So, and this was actually the main problem we were facing, because you might have that the same object is represented in a different way in different data sets. And there is where actually you start having something to deal with respect to data management. So here I have an example of a scholar actually having a requirement. So I'm looking for all the amphoras of a certain type that have been produced in a specific settlement And I also would like to have all the available information about the physical characteristics of these amphoras, their dating, and the inscription that were carried on this data. So in order to reply to such a request, you need actually to integrate the data sets I showed you before. And you need to do that in a way that actually the scholar, that is an historian of the Roman Empire, is able to access this data. So here I have a very small example of a relational model. At the very top of the slides, we have three tables with values inside, and there on the bottom part of the slides, I have a representation of the schema of a data, of the database, okay, of the schema of this table. So if you want, for example, just query these data sets, with the aim of returning all the amphoras and the date that they were produced, you see that actually you have to formulate an SQL query, that is the language that you use to query a relational database, in a way that is actually not so straightforward or intuitive. So you see there are a lot of join, a lot of, let's say, operations that you have to carry on with, and also you have to understand which is the implicit meaning of the labels that are used in that have been used in implementing the database. So this is not easy. This is not straightforward. It is basically because the knowledge behind the knowledge that's been used actually to build the database is not explicitly represented anywhere. So in order to create proper queries, even if we restrict ourselves to just one, let's say, technical format of data management, that is the relational model, I mean, it's not easy. You have to know perfectly the meaning, the scheme of the database you are working on. You have to know the query languages. You have to specify proper queries that are syntactically correct. And then you have to merge the answer back if you are actually spreading somehow your query to different data sources. You have to merge the answer back in a reasonable way, maybe filtering out some data that is not useful to reply to the information requirement of the users. And of course, in order to, if you have more than one database, not just like in our example, but you have more data sets, different data sets with different tables, of course you can use actually data federation tools that are outside, but still this does not actually solve the problem, because in the query you specify for this data federation tool, you have to act to say which are, we have to use the specific label of each data set that we are going to query. So somehow we say that federating the data is not the same as integrating them. And here is where actually the scholars get lost. So the way we tackled this problem was to somehow make explicit the knowledge of the domain expert by means of an ontology. And second point we were dealing with was to somehow map the data sources to the entities, to the elements that constitute this ontology, and then provide the scholar with an intuitive way to specify their query by means of the ontology itself and the vocabulary of this ontology that was somehow a domain-oriented vocabulary and not a bunch of terms created for the implementation of a database. So this actually resolves into an approach, a specific approach that is called OBDI. And here you see a very, very simple architecture of this of a OBDI platform. At the very bottom you have different data sources. I was just talking about relational databases, I restrict myself today to this specific technological solution, but you might have actually different formats and different repository, such as NoSQL repository, for example, JSON file, CSV, and so on and so forth. Then on top of that, we have mappings that actually map the values that you retrieve from these data sources to the element of the ontology and a domain ontology on top of this mapping. So on top of that, of course, you can actually build whatever data visualization tools or facilities you might have in mind in order to ease the access to this data. And thanks to the fact that we are actually based this platform, this OBDA technology tools, already existing standards, and in particular, the semantic web technologies, you can also, you have for free, basically, a data access point based on this standard, that is this query answering box here at the top. So in the rest of this presentation, I will move I will give you, an idea of these two main components, the ontology and the mappings, the way we use them in OBDI. I think that we don't have to spend so much time on these slides. We already mentioned ontology. I think that most of the people attending this conference know what an ontology is. So basically we have is a way to represent explicitly domain knowledge and the constitute elements of this of an ontology are classes, and then you have properties of the instances of these classes. You can represent relationships between classes and also properties of instances of these relationships, such as symmetry, transitivity, functionality, and so on and so forth. So what I would like to stress here is that what is important for us is that an ontology is a formal somehow, is a mathematical artifact somehow, is a mathematical logic artifact in our point from our point of view. So we have a formal syntax specifying the way you have to write down your assertion, and you have a formal semantics that provide a non-ambiguous, let's say, representation of the meaning of the assertion you are writing down. So in the context of EpiNet, we started building what we call an EpiNet conceptual reference model. So we start actually working with the domain expert, with the historians of the Roman Empire. We built up a quite complex conceptual model that was somehow aligned with the already existing standard. I would say that this alignment was mostly a specialization. So we somehow use the, for example, CDOC or the Eagle metadata model in order to have a top, let's say, layer, a layer on top of our conceptual reference model. And then in order to use our OBDI technology, we identify a fragment of this conceptual model, and we translate this fragment into an ontology written into what is called HAUL2QL. So HAUL is a standard for representing ontologies. It's a recommendation by the W3C consortium, and it comes in three different profiles. QL is one of these profiles, and it's called a lightweight, let's say, ontology language. This is just to give you an idea it's a graphical representation of the ontology we are talking about and we developed. You can find the link at the bottom of this slide. If you want to know more, you will find there documentation about this ontology. As I said, I don't want to go into the detail of this model, but you see that there are more or less represented all the data domain that I introduced at the very beginning of my presentation. So how query answering, so how the data are accessed over ontology? we posed a query to the OBDI system. The OBDI system actually reasons over the knowledge that is explicitly represented in the ontology and returns back the answer to the user. So the way this reasoning is done is by rewriting. So we are used to say that somehow the ontology is compiled into the user query, and we call this this process query answering by rewriting. So in order to give you an idea, I have an example here that is not on the Roman Empire domain. It's something that should be closer to all of us. So suppose that you have a query that asks for all the people that are actually work for something, and this something is actually a project, and we have data saying that Jose is working for a project called Epinet, Martin is working for On Top, and then Jose is a coordinator and Diego is a coordinator. So according to this data, if you don't have any background knowledge or domain knowledge about this domain, the only answer we can actually return to the user are Jose and Martin, right? Because we know that actually they work for Epinet and they work for On Top, so they work for two projects. What happens if I actually introduce knowledge in terms of an ontology to this context? So in this case, we have an ontology that says that the coordinator are researcher, that the researcher actually are people that works for something, and that the second argument of this binary relation works for is a project. So a researcher works for a project. Forget about the corresponding rules that are just translation into first order logic of these ontological assertions. So now that we have this background knowledge, we can rewrite the initial query by the users. And as you see, we get more results than before. So we got Diego, because we know that Diego is a coordinator. A coordinator is a researcher. A researcher works for a project, and so it is part of the resulting answers. So you see that actually by using the ontology, we can enrich somehow the answers to the users. So here I have another example that is actually from our domain, from the Epinet domain. Here we look for everything that is of type inscriptions, but we have somehow information in the ontology saying that stamps and tituli picti are kind of inscriptions. So this is a simple taxonomy. And we also know that actually this property is about as domain. So the first argument of this relation are the inscriptions. So without any kind of reasoning, if I ask for all the inscriptions and I have just data about stamp and the properties about, I have no answer, right? So descriptions do not appear among my data. So I cannot actually reply these questions, this query. But if you look at the knowledge that is explicitly represented in the ontology about inscriptions and the properties about, then we can actually rewrite the initial query into this one that say, okay, give me everything that is of type stamp and together with everything that is about something else. Okay. I hope this is clear enough. And in this case, of course, I can reply with the data I have in my database concerning stamp that are inscriptions and the domain of this property is about that are still inscriptions. So the second main component of the systems are the mappings. The mappings are somehow assertions that connects the data sources, the values in the tables, if we talk about relational model, to the entity of the ontology. And what is important to stress here is that by means of this mapping, we create what we call a virtual data layer. So The idea is that you keep your data into the data set, into the original data set. You don't touch them. You just connect them to the elements of your ontologies. And you don't actually materialize once again all the data that you are integrating. So you keep the data in the original sources. You just create these connections. So to be a little bit more precise, the way you actually, the results of this mapping is a graph that we call virtual RDF graph that is made of triples, of this form. So that is typically an RDF graph of triples like this one, subject, property, and objects, okay? So let me move to an example because I think it's gonna be easier to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. So here we have a table that is called amphora T. You have three attributes in this table and we have two mappings. So the first mapping on the right-hand side of the mapping, we have an SQL query that basically retrieves values from this table. On the left-hand side of the mapping, we have the triples that populate our domain ontology. So in this case, we select the identifier of the amphora from the first attribute of the table, and we actually create assertions in the ontology saying that all these guys here coming with their own identifiers are of this type, amphora. So are instances of this class, okay? So in the second example, we are actually populating a data type property of the ontology saying that a given amphora carries a specific inscription. And we do that by actually extracting the values again from the table before. So if we apply these two mappings, what we get in the first case are two triples saying that A24 and A22 are two amphoras, are two instances of this class. And in the second mapping, we create two triples saying that A24 carries an inscription, the inscription PNN, and A22 carries the inscription ARVA. Okay, so graphically speaking, you get the RDF virtual graph that is on the top right of this slide. You see our two instances are here. These actually lines say that they are of this type, amphora, and these are the data type property connecting each amphora to the inscriptions that is carried by. Okay, so this graph is actually what the users at the end of the day will query. So we can do a lot of different things with mappings. So mappings are somehow a powerful tool if we talk about data access and data integration. Here I put an example. For example, we can do what we call entity linking. Suppose you have different data sets, as I was mentioning before, that overlap in context. So they talk somehow about the same thing, but in a different way. So here, for example, for simplicity, I put the same table as before with A24 and A52, and another table that are actually calling the same objects in a different way, such as PL A24 and PL A52. Okay, so by means of a mapping, I can actually manipulate the identifiers of these objects in this second table here in such a way that I can somehow consider them the same way as this object here. So I do that by means of an application of a string operation that basically delete this prefix to the terms here, and then I use the results of the SQL query here in the right-hand side of the mapping to populate these triples that says that a given amphora has place a given place, okay? So So we can actually use the entities to extract, we can use mappings to extract entities from different data sources that is somehow related with the data integration task we had.
Sorry, Alessandro, try to wrap so that we have time for some question.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I run out of time as usual. So we can do other things. We can actually customizing somehow our data access. So in this case, for example, we translate interval of time into imperial dynasties of the Roman Empire in such a way that the user, the historians, were actually more familiar with this kind of information. I mean, to ease their access to this data, we can homogenize data. If you have data that are somehow implemented in different format, we can actually force them or cast all these format to be of a certain time. In this case, or integer here, and we are talking about starting date and ending date, starting here and ending here for a given phenomenon. Just let me conclude by actually pointing to an infrastructure that is online, that is powered by this OBDA and OBDI technology that is called Roman Open Data. There you can actually query all the data that we integrated during the project without caring about their original, let's say, implementation, nor, let's say, the data sources where they're actually stored. So here you see a graphical interface where you can actually move from a geographically, let's say, representation of the finding of the inscriptions. And also you can see the information related to each of these inscriptions. You have faceted search behind that. Everything here is actually, so behind this graphic interface, there is the OBDI technology that actually fire queries expressed in SparkQL against the ontology that we developed. So let me skip what we have seen today. Here you see there is the URL of the infrastructure of the platform if you want to play with. And thank you for your attention. If you have any question, I would be glad to answer.
Thank you very much, Alessandro.
Thank you.
So I think that indeed we have at least two questions, one from Marion Lame.
Yep.
I think that she has some problem with the network, she mentioned. I don't know whether Marion is able actually to ask the question.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. If the network shut down, I will write down my question. As the network does not work very well, maybe I missed some information, so I apologize if my question is not matching perfectly with what you said.
But
you worked on epigraphy, so in digital epigraphy, as you mentioned the amphora stamps of Barcelona, and you must mention other kind of inscriptions. I've got two questions for you.
Yeah.
The first one is, did you have the opportunity to make a confrontation with the Eagle data model, that is the data model built up by the community of epigraphers in digital epigraphy a couple of years ago. And if you had this opportunity, if you have an opinion about it. And my second question is about your data model. I don't remember the number, the page of the slide, but you mentioned that you take care of the transcriptions too. And I was wondering in this transcriptions aspect, if you are thinking about an ontology to describe the writing, what we called in epigraphy the ductus, the way of letters are incised or drawn on one side, and the way they are destroyed also on the other side. Well, this is my two main questions, and I'm very interested by these digital epigraphies aspects. So if it's too long, we can also chat afterwards in some other occasion.
Yeah. It will be a pleasure for me. So just if I have to shortly comment on that. So I said that I actually decided to skip the detail of the digital artifacts that we created, and in particular about the modeling part of the story, for two reasons. First, because I'm not a domain expert. So I'm a computer scientist. Yes, I have a degree in philosophy, but I almost forget all my knowledge about the Roman Empire. And especially, I'm not an expert in epigraphy. So what I can say to you is that, yes, at the very beginning of a project, we participated in a few, actually, Eagle conferences. It was the time
I remember that. I did remember that. Yes.
You were there.
Yes, I was there.
I remember that we had a brief confrontation with the computer scientist behind the Eagle infrastructure at the very beginning. We had a look at the model, let's say, the meta model that is developed there, but then we somehow kept a different, let's say, direction. So we decided somehow to move on developing our own, let's say, solutions, and we postponed then the task of aligning our solutions with existing ones, such as Eagles, for example. There is another task that is extremely important that relates with TI, you know, TI is called.
Yes, and Lou Bernard has a question for you. The next question is Lou Bernard. So yes, please proceed. Maybe you want to mention Epidoc and stuff like that.
I don't know whether you know a colleague that is called Pietro Liuzzo.
I know him.
Okay, so you know him. So I've been in contact with him. I'm still in contact with him. But again, it's a task that we didn't fulfill within the project lifespan, let's say. But it was something that we discussed a lot. So the fact of being able to integrate actually tie, let's say, annotation to our inscription. The transcription. Mm. So at the moment, we are playing with pure strings. Okay.
Okay. And about describing the writings, because you mentioned the amphora stamps of Barcelona, and the amphora stamps are one of the most complex writings in ancient times, along with hieroglyphs, for instance, because they are very complex and they are combining letters, and sometimes they are written upside down and from left to right, and sometimes they are barely legible. It's a kind of archetype of complexity in a couple of letters, and most of the times experts of amphora stamps are deeply interested in describing in a very subtle details their writings, and I cannot imagine nothing else than an ontology to do so. I think, for instance, I don't think TEI is the best tool to describe this kind of complexity, but it has to stay compatible with the transcription in TEI, for instance.
Yeah. Somehow I agree with you, even if I'm not an expert. And I mean, I just tested the flavor of the complexity behind this kind of study. But okay. I cannot actually provide you a proper answer. So I would like to have here aside me my colleague from history telling you.
I will be very happy to proceed this discussion afterwards.
Yeah, with pleasure.
Yeah, just let me mention that if you discuss, about conference-related topics, maybe you can comment, I mean, on the Google Doc so that everyone can have a look at what you say.
Okay.
If you believe, so that it's not too private, let's say, and we keep a discussion. Okay, Luc Bernard, if you want to ask your question, please.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the great speech and for the amazing project. My question is regarding how do you quote your different data sets that you use and the implementation that you create in the Roman open data? I guess you have direct links from where the data comes from, but is the OBI, is your system mentioned? How do we requote it? And how did you solve those issues in the project? And how do we quote you?
Okay, so there is an important comment here. So, Aloha, in principle, as an expert of this OBEI approach, I would like to tell you that you can actually keep your data sets as they are and where they are somehow. And provided that you have a, let's say, an access, read access to these data sets, you can connect the values of this data set to your ontology. Okay, this is the ideal world. Okay, but we are not in ideal world, we are in a real world, and actually what we did was to connect to the communities behind the management of each data set and ask them for giving us dumps of this data set that we are actually materialized into proper relational databases managed by ourselves or managed by the project. And at that point, we create this connection. So this was mainly not a technological problem or technological issues, but a political issue. So most of the time, I have to say, we face the problem of, let's say, creating an open connection between the systems and the identified database, because the owner of this database were not actually happy with the fact that we were building these direct connections.
Yes.
It was somehow, we were somehow forced to do something that we didn't want to do because of, I mean, you know, social aspects of the scientific research.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
This replies somehow to your question.
Great.
Okay, let me thank Alessandro Mosca again for the great talk. I mean, just let me stress that indeed OBDA approaches are very important to make connection between semantic web technologies and relational databases. I mean, sometimes people, when they think about ontologies, they just think about semantic web. But indeed, I mean, OBDA approach is a great approach to combine multiple techniques. So thank you again.